Hello and welcome to You Don't Know Lit. My name is Nick Argyris, and this week we're celebrating Women's History Month by bringing one book to help me our two high school English teachers, Ian and Joe.
When we say this, let me ping specifically on this week, we're celebrating Women's History
just
Month.
Just this
the rest
week.
The rest of the weeks.
We've brought the bare minimum. We're just doing it this week.
We are acknowledging it. It exists.
We're contractually acknowledging that its existence.
Nick is giving me a hard time, Litheads here. He is acting like this is a mistake that we have all made, but this is, in fact, I screwed up, right?
Joe's fessing up.
I screwed up.
Joe, can you quick apologize to every woman?
I apologize to women everywhere. As a fan of women, I apologize to women everywhere.
Joe didn't read the document correctly and brought the wrong book for the 100%. Wrong week.
And screwed up. To be fair... We have something like 200 episodes at this point. And Ian and I live in constant fear because this has never happened before. We live in constant fear of this happening. But the good news is my name is Joe Holshue, and I read an absolutely killer book this week that I super loved. And Nick, I am so excited to tell you and Ian about Madeline Miller's return to the show, her follow-up to Song of Achilles, her 2018 juggernaut, Cersei.
And just to clarify, this is not the character from Game of Thrones.
May your earlobes turn into assholes and shit on your shoulders.
Hey, the plot doesn't fucking matter at all. This is what I think it's about.
If you look closely enough, every author was at some point a racist.
Audiobooks don't count, right?
All art is quite useless.
Who told you that?
Fun fact, that is how Joe laughs.
I've never put that together before, that her name is Cersei Lannister. Wow.
You're welcome.
Seems intentional, because she's kind of a witch.
Which one came first?
Obviously. Obviously, the mythical figure of Cersei came before.
Which one came first? George R. R. Martin's. Or the Odyssey.
true love.
Madeline Miller is the author.
Mm-hmm. Joe said a minute ago.
Yeah. For those kids in back, tell us a little bit about her.
Yeah, so Madeline Miller, she does kind of have a deal. She's a classics nerd whose mother read her the Iliad when she was like 5 years old or something like that, like something preposterously young. She studied at Brown University. She got a master's degree in classics. And Nick, you're thinking like classic literature here. When we talk about a degree in classics, we're talking about like, she learned ancient Greek. She learned Latin. She studied the classics.
There is kind of like a pipeline, because this also reminds me of other authors. I guess Emily Wilson, who did the first woman to publish an English translation of the Odyssey. Wilson's more in academic, but this is a thing you do. You go to like one of these big fancy universities and. Then you get you're getting to classics, and then you make update it for the modern world.
Yeah, which is very cool, because I do admire that. You know, as somebody who got an English degree, a question you hear a lot is, what are you going to do with an English degree? Uh-huh. I can't imagine how often you hear that if you're going to get a classics degree. Yeah, so she had a deep interest in Greek mythology, a deep interest in the classics. Like, she grew up on this stuff. Her senior year at college, her senior year, her when she was getting her bachelor's degree, she started writing Song of Achilles. She worked for it took her like 10 years to write Song of Achilles. She worked as like a Latin teacher during that time and a tutor. She published Song of Achilles, and now she's a writer. This is her follow-up to Song of Achilles. And Nick, you've heard of Sophomore Slump before, like the second album,
right?
This is not a sophomore slump. This book is
what's the opposite?
Sophomore slam. This is her sophomore slam.
Nice. Very good, yes. Joe. Very good. I've never read the Odyssey.
Cersei is a pretty good candidate for kind of that rehabilitation, because her story seems to set it up pretty well.
So that might bring me to my 30 seconds here.
Oh, beautiful.
Nick, in the Odyssey, I'll tell you everything that you need to know. Circe is a witch. She's a bad guy who spends her days picking herbs and brewing potions and luring sailors to her island just to turn them into pigs and generally just like doing witchy things. Well, in Madeline Miller's Circe, all of that is still true, except Cersei's now the good guy. It's Cersei's story told by her. It is a story of mythological realism. If you're looking for an oxymoron, it's the 2018 follow-up to Song of Achilles.
When you say like realism, does it still like take place in that world, or is she like a young girl that goes to college?
No, this is like
Nick wants monsters. Are there monsters?
Are there monsters?
There are monsters. It is
okay.
There are monsters, but this is very much like
sacrifice.
Is there sacrifice? Not intentional sacrifice.
When you say there's monsters, are the men the monsters?
Well, no. Well, there's also actual monsters. Are
you saying that the men are in this monsters that she calls monsters are not monsters? Are you challenging her?
Okay. All right.
It's okay, Joe. I'll cut it out.
In this book, Ian has predicted this, men are definitely monsters. But also, like, Scylla is in this book, which is an actual six-headed sea monster that actually eats sailors. So there's monsters and there's monsters.
The Odyssey is famously a voyage. Mm-hmm. We get some time sort of, what's the word? Static on Circe's island in the Odyssey, but a big point of the Odyssey is the dude going. Yeah. It's a journey. It's a quest.
Adventures. He's going around. He's bouncing from island to island. He's seeing new stuff. Yes.
And sometimes he like stays on an island and he tells it like he's there and he's like, and then these are all the things that happened to me. But how is there a narrative arc? Do we get like Circe's where she came from, how she became so island bound? Do we like, Where does the narrative come from?
So we.
The Why story did that of sound like you know the answer?
I don't. I legitimately don't know the answer.
It sounded like a
leading
like
question.
The moderator. Yeah.
Well, I know there must be an answer because Joe has a positive response to this. And I think a book that's this well respected probably doesn't say, well, here's chapter 19 in a row of Circe sitting around and turning people into pigs.
Circe turning people to pigs. No, this is Circe's entire story. It starts with her birth. She is born to a god, a Titan god, one of the old gods. Helios is her father, and her mother is a naiad. Yep. She grows up amongst gods, but she's actually kind of bad at being a god. Like her brothers and sisters, they shine like the sun. Like Helios's children are famously beautiful. And Circe is just like a little bit dirty blonde. Yeah. Like her eyes don't glow like theirs do. She doesn't have a godly voice, right? Like the other gods speak in these booming voices, but Circe's just kind of an outsider from the start.
In terms of like legitimate, you know, the Greek Roman gods and all that, weren't they all kind of flawed though?
Oh, tragically.
I mean, isn't
so,
that the whole point, right? Is that, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So like her own.
So her flaw was her eyes.
We're usually not flawed in terms of like, this person was not very powerful and kind of ugly. Usually they're like, this person was super powerful, but also had no moral compass. This person was pretty beautiful, but also a psychopath.
Yeah, more morally
flawed. Basically all like to have sex. That was most of their flaws.
With all sorts of stuff. Like people, mortals, gods, cows.
Joe.
Yes. No, anything. Yes. If that's a beautiful cow,
microphones,
keep the gods
keyboards,
away.
Mouses.
I'm if just it's a beautiful mouse, I look absolutely. At. A beautiful keyboard, yes. She's born to gods. She's like grows up in this godly kingdom, but she's not that good at being a god. She's like definitely an outsider. She doesn't really have powers. And even it kind of sucks because even her brothers and sisters, like of the same mom and dad, are super good at it. Right? Like they are good at like their stuff. It sucks. So Circe grows up in that court. She falls in love with a mortal at a certain point.
As they do. They all do this.
You got to try it once.
Well, and the thing is she's like pretty scared of being in love with a mortal. She hates the idea that he's going to die. So she says, I know, I'm going to go find this special herb, this special sap out of this special flower.
Smart.
I'm going to use it, and it is going to reveal his true form, because I know that his true form is a god.
Wow.
And she does. She gives him this herb, she gives him this potion, and this mortal man, this mortal fisherman, turns into Glaucus, a sea god. Like, kind of a minor sea god that you haven't heard of before, but like, he turns into a sea god.
He turns into a C-list character.
Okay, so I have a question.
Yes?
This seems pretty clear, but I'll ask it anyway. She's using an herb to help him realize his true self. Is this a metaphor for?
I don't think so.
Drugs?
Is this a
book about like romps with drugs?
Ian, you have to wait to hear the overt message. We just get to start with it.
This I feels don't. Like the overt message. Do yeah, drugs and but, you'll become a god.
What's the overt message here, Joe?
Oh, well, let me tell you what happens with Glaucus, because I think it hints at it. I don't think it's so much a metaphor of drugs, but have you ever heard the phrase that behind every great man, there's a great woman? Like, behind every great man, there's a woman that made him that way. She makes Glaucus a god, an actual god. She's super in love with Glaucus. Everything's great. They're going to get married. And then once Glaucus becomes a god, what does he do, Nick?
Nick?
He becomes a god, and then he marries Cersei, and they live happily ever after.
He probably betrays her.
Betrays her for a prettier, more godly woman. Yes, right.
Oh, don't try to change people. That's the moral.
Even drugs can't change people. It's anti-drug instead of pro-drug.
I don't think the drugs are the main point of any of this. Yeah. Even the common man Nick saw that.
This book, in some ways, could be read as kind of an instruction manual of like, hey, do you want to know how women grow really embittered about men living in a patriarchal system?
Ooh.
Let me show you, right? She has in this book a terrible and abusive father. She has a brother who's kind of like her partner in crime that abandons her like at the first chance she can get. She turns the mortal into a god, then he abandons her. There's like these jealousy like revenges that she has with other goddesses. She eventually goes to this island, goes to the island that we're famous for here. And it's kind of through a long
Athens?
Series of events that don't matter.
Mykonos?
Nick, the island is called Ayaya.
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 Yaya means Greek. Means grandma in Greek.
It doesn't, yeah.
Yeah, are there any grandmas there?
No, and there's nobody there.
Are there any metaphorical grandmas there?
God, they cook so good. Mm-hmm. Oh, man, there's not a Yaya that doesn't cook good.
Okay, I have a question. Yeah. When you say cook, do you mean like make food or like they cook up? Are we talking cannibalism here? This is the Odyssey. Anything goes.
He's tough sometimes to have around. Most of the time, not.
It's on purpose.
So, Joe.
Yes.
Then what happens?
Well, okay, so she gets to this island, and then
are you just reading this book to us? Is this
no? Well, I'm trying not to, because I'm okay, like
chapter
this,
one.
Like,
I am
a
boy.
Lot of stuff happens in this book, right? Ian's question initially was like, this can't just be like Cersei on her island turning men into pigs the whole time, and the answer is no. But the middle part of this book is definitely that. But like, the great thing about it is when you read the Odyssey, and you see Cersei on her island turning sailors into pigs, Cersei feels like a really bad guy. She feels like a very dangerous feminine lure. She feels like a cautionary tale of like what it's like to let your guard down around a dangerous woman, get a little too drunk, eat a little too much, etc. When you read Cersei, her turning a bunch of sailors into pigs feels super justified and also a super prudent thing to do for a nymph who lives on an island by herself that is constantly invaded by crews of pirates.
Gross dudes.
Gross dudes.
This is the thing. This is the claim, right? The idea that every villain doesn't, like, no villain believes that they're the villain. Every villain, like, has a perfectly good reason in their mind. And maybe it's like the voices in my head told me to, but let's look at why they're doing the things that they're doing. There's got to be some explanation.
And Nick, the first time that sailors show up, she is so excited to not be alone on this island anymore. Like, she like rolls out the red carpet, you know, the famous Greek hospitality, of course.
Oh, she gets all the yayas cooking.
She feeds them. She takes care of them. She is so excited to have them. And then after dinner, they're kind of picking their teeth and they're looking around and they start asking her like, so,
where are all the other people?
Is there a man of this household?
Where are those bones over there?
Is there a father here? Is there a, right? Like, basically, are you protected at all?
Right.
Dear nymph living on an island.
Can we insult you?
Yeah. And when she finds out what pirates do when they are to nymphs who are unprotected on islands, she starts turning them into pigs through her witchcraft and magic. Yes.
So, Joe, this is kind of like a trope as old as time. Like, take the...
Yeah, literally,
this is
the Odyssey.
This is Wicked. This is all these stories. Like, let's take this one character who was brushed over but could be incredibly interesting and write a story for him. Is there a name for that? Just like, is there a name for that? Is that a trope? I don't know.
Ian's raising his hand. Ian, do you have an answer?
Yeah, you don't have to raise your hand, Ian.
Joe, while you think, I want to just point out that this is also a thing that we've seen in nonfiction. The move to say, this thing that you didn't know about, it's actually super important. And we've talked about that in nonfiction. So like, this seems like a similar trend. This character, this fictional character, and their motivation that you didn't think that very much about, they're actually super important.
Yeah.
It's a modern thing. I don't think they used to
do
this.
Like, it's a Disneyism, right? Like, too, like that.
Or
just...
is Disney chicken and egg? Is Disney is like, I think of Angelina Jolie in Maleficent, like, let's do this story.
Yeah.
Did Disney do this or?
I don't know. I'll ask Madame Web because that shit's garbage.
Well, there you go.
Maybe it's just the scraping of the bottom of the pot.
Well, I think in this case, it's not scraping the bottom of the pot. I think it's Madeline Miller taking a look around at mythology, this mythology that she grew up with, that she loved with, and being like, because, I mean, women get a pretty bad shake in the Odyssey. Like, they are villains. They are outside of Penelope, who just whose virtue is that she patiently waits for 20 years for her husband to come home. Like, that is why she's admired. Outside of her, all the women in the Odyssey are bad guys. And most of them are bad guys because they like exercise agency, like because they live outside of a patriarchal structure, because they like,
So if you're a young Madeline Miller, you're reading all of these classics that you love so much and
saying this is bullshit.
Like, what the like all of the women suck?
And the line about classics is that they express, like, the reason they stick around is because they express something about the human condition. But when you're more than 50% of the population, you're sitting there and be like, this isn't my condition.
Yeah.
Like, not all the women I know are monsters, evil hags, or...
Ian, sorry, we're not allowed to say human condition on this show. That's a 5-minute break for you. You can't talk for another 5 minutes.
The point that I'm trying to make is that you don't... You want to set that straight. You want to say, well, what about the other 50.2% of the humans out there?
And this book came, I mean, so this book does a ton of things well. Like, this book, I think, is like a feminist, like capital F feminist text, right? Can certainly be read as such. It centers on women's experiences. Cersei is a character that like lives successfully outside of a patriarchal structure, right? Like, one of the things the other gods don't like about her is she doesn't abide by the rules that they put forth. Like, there's a reason she's on that frickin' island. It's because she's being punished for acting out, right? It has a really empathetic look at motherhood and what that means, right? Like, in like, this woman who has negative experiences with men has a son, and she has a son that she super frickin' loves, and then he goes away to like become a man on his own, and it's the conflicting emotions that you would have when you see your son leave.
Every 1-star review here is how nothing happens. So, let me ask my question. Is this book, obviously things happen in this book. There are pages with words written on them.
Yes.
So these people are morons. I don't know how they missed that. My question is, did most of these people not understand what was happening on the page because they didn't read the Odyssey?
I think you would understand this book with a light dusting of Greek mythology. Like if you had a Greek mythology book when you were a little kid, I think you'd be fine with this book. I don't think you need to know the Odyssey.
Lightning bolts.
This is a really common slam that I saw against this book. Like even in like bookish places on the internet, when people didn't like it, they were like bookish.com. When people didn't like it, they were like, it was boring. This book is very, very internal. Right? Like it is very much inside of Cersei. And if you say nothing happens, well, maybe it's not like high action like the Odyssey is, but there's a lot frickin' happening. Maybe a good example of what these reviewers might not like is because Cersei is the main character and because it's like told from her point of view, at a certain point, there's adventure that happens off the page. Like there's adventure that happens that you don't see. At a certain point, she sends her son away. Her son wants to go meet his dad, right? And that means he has to build a boat and go off into the sea and like sail through danger. And then he comes back and things haven't exactly gone how he was hoping they've gone. But as a viewer, as a reader of this, you only get it through him telling the story. Like we don't actually see what happened when he sailed away. We get him telling us what happened when he moved away. And narratively, it feels weird because most of the time that would be shown to us. Like we would see the action scene. We would see him sailing. We would see the fights, right?
Well, not in the book.
Right. See here is it, of course, in big scare quotes. but like we don't get that. Like we get him relating that story to his mother and his mother's reactions to it. Yeah. And that doesn't feel as satisfying. Like that feels quote, quote, boring, but the point isn't his action. The point is her reaction.
Yeah. Mm. No, that's fine. These people are idiots.
Yeah. It's a terrible take.
Bookish.com is taken. Totally wasted URL. Really? But I will share this. As an alternate option, GoDaddy has put forward this website, which is bibliophoria.org.
That sounds highbrow.
But what I think is I see this made up word, bibliophoria, is that would be a great reaction to a good book. This is giving me bibliophoria.
Absolutely. Bibliophoria. I love that. Mm-hmm. I love that. Joe, did this book give you bibliophoria?
Thank you, Ian.
This book, I thought this is a page turner. So when I see people say it was boring, like I thought, I didn't get it. I thought it was an absolute page turner. I thought it was gripping. I thought it was cool.
Biblio, go fuck themselves.
Biblio, fuck yourself. So, that's it. I have little else to say. I thought this book was great. I loved it. I think you should read it.
Ian, tell the litheads what to do immediately.
Litheads, climb in your wienermobiles,
right,
and drive on over to, do we have bibliophoria yet? Drive on over to www.tweenvogue.com. You can spend hours on the website clicking buttons, scrolling.
This is available.
Looking at the colors.
This is most certainly available.
At our website, you can listen to old episodes, of which there are quite a few at this point. You can request that we read books, or request themes for us. You can request stickers to adorn your laptops and water bottles and light poles and so on and so forth. You can also follow us on social media. We're on all the ones that matter and some of the ones that don't.
I'm pretty much done posting to anything but TikTok.
Amazing. Love it.
You can follow us on those other ones. You may or may not see our posts in your feed because social media is dead.
Do you know how much bibliophoria.com is available to buy right now? Guess the number.
Oh, wow. If GoDaddy recommended it, $4.99. $499 is what I'm saying.
$5.
Okay. Ian, $5. $69.
Oh, wow.
Great. Cents? 69 cents.
99 cents.
All right. This is a conversation between Cersei and Penelope in this book. Penelope, the long-suffering wife of Odysseus.
Jaime Lannister.
She nodded a private gesture as if in confirmation. He told us that you took further precautions for him as well, that you have cast a spell over the island and no god, not even an Olympian, can pass. Gods of the dead may pass, I said, no others. You're fortunate, she said, to be able to summon such protections. From the beach came faint shouts, our sons moving about the boat. I'm embarrassed to ask you this, but I did not bring a black cloak with me when we left. Do you have one I might wear? I would mourn for him. I looked at her, as vivid in my doorway as the moon in the autumn sky. Her eyes held mine, gray and steady. It's a common saying that women are delicate creatures. Flowers, eggs, anything that may be crushed in a moment's carelessness. If I had ever believed it, I no longer did.